Hello, and welcome to the audio edition of Beastly Business, the first in a series of animal behavior human-animal bond mysteries written and read by Myrna Milani. Chapter 21. Once I knew my most immediate threat came from an animal, a strange calm washed over me. Now I could make plans. Now I could do something. It took me a remarkably short time to decide what to do, because only two possibilities came to mind. I could either try to outrun the dog through the tangled undergrowth around me, or I could try to make it to the water. Given the unlikelihood of accomplishing the former, I ran to the lake as fast as my fear-driven legs could carry me. Although a dog conceivably could outswim me, it needed solid footing to launch a full-blown attack. Lacking that in the water, it would be reduced to harassing me from closer quarters. While not a particularly comforting thought, it was better than getting knocked down and mauled in the woods. As I ran through the shallow muck toward the deeper water, a crack of lightning and loud rumble of thunder drowned out the sound of the movement behind me, and another advantage of my plan occurred to me. Surely no dog in its right mind would go swimming during a thunderstorm. By the time I'd shed my shoes and swam about 25 yards from the shore, the wind had picked up considerably, and periodic bursts of lightning strafed the serrated crests of the waves, slashing the restless surface of the lake. As the storm grew nearer, increasingly brief periods of total darkness followed the sudden, blinding bursts of light and quickly disoriented me. Then the rain came, a torrential downpour that obliterated what few remaining cues remained. But by then, it didn't matter where I was, because it took all the concentration and energy I could muster just to keep from drowning in the rolling water. During a brief lull in the punishing rain, I forced myself to stop closing my eyes during the erratic explosions of light and take in everything I could before the darkness enveloped me again. Eventually, I located the shore and began fighting my way more than swimming toward it. But the lightning strobing effect caused the land to leap toward and away from me in a way that made it impossible to judge distance and whether I made any progress toward the shore. All too soon, my arms and legs ached, and my lungs felt like they would burst. Killer dog or no, I couldn't stay afloat much longer. But you must, some inner voice reasonably pointed out. Otherwise, you'll drown. I repeated that basic truth over and over, and swam for what may have been several minutes or hours, for all I know. Finally, I staggered through the muddy shallows and collapsed in a muddy heap on the muddy shore. By the time my breathing returned to normal, the thunder rumbled faintly in the distance, the winds had calmed, and only a gentle rain fell. But just as I started to congratulate myself for surviving the storm, a soft, animal sound from a nearby thicket reminded me that my original problem remained. I heaved myself up, moved back into the shallows, and began sloshing through the muck. 3 times suspicious motions or sounds sent me fleeing into the deeper water. But by the 3rd time, I knew I was allowing the movements of an owl as well as a killer dog to frighten me. After another excruciatingly long interval, I reached a section of the shore I estimated lay parallel to the road where I'd left my car, and automatically reached into my pocket for my keys. And found nothing. Frantic, I slapped all of my pockets and discovered I'd lost everything they once contained. "Get a grip!" shouted some internal inhabitant. "He left them in the car like you always do." I wanted to cry with relief, but I charged through the woods instead, ignoring the branches clawing me, but ever aware of the faint sounds of movement around me. When I arrived at the car, I joyfully wrenched open the door. Or rather, I tried to joyfully wrench open the door. But I couldn't, because it was locked. Miss Kalinowski, my 11th grade English teacher, passed passionately insisted that people who weren't smart enough to think of the proper words used profanity instead. That night, I admitted the woman had a point. As I tugged frantically on all four doors of my car and found each of them solidly unyielding, not a single intelligent word occurred to me. Instead, the vilest, most unspeakable epithets filled my mind, words I didn't even know I knew. Such a shameful stream of them, I wondered if I were having some sort of a seizure, or if the poison in the lake water had ruined my mind, too. I probably would have continued running around my car, uselessly yanking on the door handles, cursing, and clinically evaluating my degenerating mental state until nothing but a few gray hairs and wrinkles remained. However, somewhere in the midst of this deranged frenzy, one or two still rational neurons pointed out that a long walk home lay ahead. "Oh, and by the way," hummed the smug cerebral minority, "that rustling in the bushes probably means something, too." The F-word slipped out before I could stop it, but it sounded so tame after what I'd been thinking, I hardly noticed. I raced from the car into the middle of the road, admittedly placing myself in a very exposed position. On the other hand, anyone or anything who wanted to get close to me would need to risk exposure, too. My plan to march down the center of the road all the way home lasted as long as it took me to hear the first car approaching. What if it was a person from the cottage out looking for me? I dove into the drainage ditch beside the road and lay trembling in the watery muck until the vehicle passed. Then I leaped up and shot back into the center of the road when a twig snapped practically in my ear and reminded me of killer dogs again. This sequence repeated itself so many times, the idea of lying down in the middle of the road and letting a car driven by a killer human run over me began to have its appeal. Where the hell's all the traffic coming from? I complained bitterly after another unscheduled dive landed me in a cluster of prickly blackberries. By that time, I didn't give a damn whether anyone heard me or not. When no intelligent answer came from without or within, I staggered back onto the rain-slick asphalt. But soon I longed for the traffic and my unscheduled dives into the ditch with its real or imagined horrors. Without passing cars to distract me, I couldn't ignore the barely audible whispering from the surrounding woods. As I walked in the rain, at first I held my body rigid, ready to ward off an attack or flee. But when the attack didn't come, an even more ominous realization washed over me. I was being stalked, played with by someone or something who could destroy me any time he wanted. I told myself only a person would play such a cruel game, but I knew that wasn't true. Matty could stalk and tease his prey with a callousness worthy of the most sociopathic serial killer. Driven by their inherent fascination with motion and novelty, the dogs could worry a defenseless creature to death. It didn't matter what species the predator claimed as its own. Once the prey showed signs of weakness, it no longer provided the predator with sufficient stimulation to kill it quickly. That occupational awareness generated two paradoxical responses in my already badly frightened mind. "Charge the bastard and end the agony," urged one. "No," pleaded the other. "Don't give him any reason to attack." In reality, though, the choice was academic. I trembled so badly from fear, cold, and exhaustion, I could do no more than put one filthy, sock-encased foot in front of the other, no matter how much my mind urged me to do more. Even knowing that as long as I stayed on the road, I led the stalker straight to my home, I couldn't bring myself to return to the woods and all the unknowns concealed beneath its dark, wet canopy. When I finally reached the foot of the crushed stone driveway that curved upward to the little house on the hill, I momentarily considered going by it. Fleeting thoughts of trudging onward to the main road and flagging down a passing motorist filled my mind. But if a car did happen along, could I trust a driver? And what would I tell that person even if I did? Where would I ask that person to take me? I knew the answer to that question immediately. Home. Where else? I wiped a mixture of tears and rain from my face with a trembling hand and stumbled up the hill. Once inside the house, I peeled off my wet clothing and put on my flannel nightgown covered with little cats. Then I lay shivering in my bed, with blankets pulled over my head and Elizabeth clutched tightly to my chest. Sometime later, I thought I heard strange noises and clung fiercely to Elizabeth and wouldn't let her go. But when nothing happened, I relaxed my grip and finally fell asleep. You've been listening to an excerpt from Beastly Business, an animal behavior and human-animal bond mystery written by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, books on animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavioral and bond sites, check out my website at mm@mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the book Beastly Business in any form are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music in The Steppes of Central Asia by Alexander Bordin is used with permission of Katova Arts, www.katova.com.